Stand by for the Terry Saul Show. 5, roll tape. 4, cue Terry. 3, bring audio up. 2, stand by. 1, play intro.
Stay tuned for the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM, KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance.
Good morning and welcome to the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station. We are KSLM AM and FM. I am your host and I'm so glad that you joined us this morning. Today's Terry Saul Show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler and the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. Today's special guest is Dr. Melinda Massart from the UPMC. Did I get that right?
Yep, UPMC.
And what does that stand for?
University of Pittsburgh Medical Center.
Okay, so you're about 3,000 miles away from us right now.
We sure are.
And I'm assuming you're at home. You're not at work, right?
Correct. Well, okay. Just like the rest of us.
Okay. Before we get into this dang virus that has basically shut down everybody, tell me a little bit about yourself. How long have you been a doctor?
So I have been a practicing physician now out of training for 11 years.
Why did you decide to go into the medical field?
There were many reasons that I went into medicine, but primarily I really loved solving problems, and the challenge of solving medical problems really appealed to me. I actually went to graduate school first and did my PhD in molecular biology and genetics, and absolutely fell in love with that and decided to continue on to medical school and eventually became a primary care doctor. And as we talked about the last time I was on your show, have really spent my career integrating genetics and genomics into primary care, which we now call precision or personalized medicine.
Yeah. How's that going for you? It's been about a year since we chatted last. How's that working out for you?
It's going phenomenal. Since the last time we spoke, I actually launched a primary care precision medicine clinic at UPMC, which has been outstanding. And until now, there really hasn't been a place for patients to come and get this level of care really anywhere across the country if they weren't already diagnosed with a specific genetic condition. And now we're able to see patients who have always been interested in being evaluated for different genetic conditions. We're able to see patients who may have engaged in some direct-to-consumer genetic testing and had results that came back that they need additional help with, and clinical testing to direct their care. And we have actually launched a project to do pharmacogenomics, which is looking at the genetics of how we metabolize medication so that we can decrease bad reactions to medications and increase the likelihood that prescribers can pick the correct medication the first time for patients. So it's really, really exciting.
Is there a lot of that going on when people are having bad reactions to medication?
Yeah, actually, adverse drug reactions or bad reactions to medication are quite common. Almost everyone at some point in their life has experienced one, and frequently that will land people in the hospital, in the emergency room, from anywhere from mild symptoms from like a rash and being itchy all the way up to severe symptoms where they can't breathe and need rescue medication. So if it's ever happened to you or you've seen it happen to someone you love, it is not a fun thing to go through. I actually had my own first drug reaction last year, and definitely something I never want to have to do again.
What, if you don't mind me asking, what was the symptoms for your reaction that you had?
Yeah, so the reaction that I had is I actually had some dental work, and you know when they do the injections to numb your mouth,
right?
They put in a combination of different medications depending on the situation. It turned out I was allergic to one of the medications, and I probably had it once before with dental work, and that sort of primed me to have an allergic reaction the second time. And so I didn't know it ahead of time. And the main symptom I have was I was really, really short of breath. And I felt like my heart was just beating so fast that it was going to jump right out of my chest. And I did end up having to go to the emergency room to be treated. And it was expensive and it was not fun.
As a medical doctor, when that's happening to you, I mean, you've got a little bit more of an insight than a normal layman would have. Did that scare the hell out of you?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You know, doctors and nurses and healthcare providers in general, we are terrible patients. So, of course, I went to my office, and it was my staff who noticed what I was experiencing. I knew what I was experiencing, but they really noticed. And they're the ones who actually put me in the car and drove me to the emergency room.
Wow. Yeah, my son is a paramedic up in Portland, Oregon, and he said the same thing. He's the worst patient there is.
We are terrible, terrible patients.
All right. Now, how did you end up in Pittsburgh? Because you were not born and raised in Pittsburgh.
I wasn't. I was born in California, but raised in Corvallis, not far from you. We ended up in Corvallis because my dad was a professor at Oregon State. And so that's where I grew up. So I'm a tried and true real Oregonian in my heart.
But are you a beaver fan or a duck fan?
Oh, well, that's a complicated story. that's a complicated story. The truth is I did go to the University of Oregon for 2 years. So I am a duck.
Okay.
I know I defected from Beaver County to Duckland Fair. But I ended up actually transferring to the University of Illinois, so I actually graduated a Fighting Illini, but that was a long time ago, and I went back to medical school and did my residency in Portland at OHSU and Providence Milwaukee Hospital, and spent then 5 years in rural Idaho in Caldwell outside of Boise, practicing primary care and working on integrating genetics into primary care, and then eventually came to Pittsburgh to really continue that dream at an academic setting where not only could I create the clinical processes to do that, but could continue doing research to advance the science to support the clinical treatment and integration of genomics into practice. And then teach the future generations. And being at a medical school, you know, there's just nothing more exciting than teaching. And I got to do that online today, and it was very exciting.
Was Pittsburgh your the final destination in your mind all along, or is it just that's the way it happened to be?
No, you know, it's God always has a plan, and I just really think that it was meant to be. We had kind of a short list of communities that we were interested in living in and where we felt like the medicine and science was the right place. And sure enough, the first person to respond to my inquiry was Pittsburgh. And this is where I ended up, and it's been truly fantastic. I have no doubt that this is where I was supposed to come.
Nice. The weather doesn't get to you at all?
You know, the weather is not too different than it is there in Salem. Pittsburgh is very protected, so we don't get all those crazy East Coast storms that you see on the news.
Right.
You know, my mom calls me every time she sees that New York and Philadelphia are getting hammered. And I look out the window, and I'm like, I don't know, Mom. It looks okay to me out here. But I think we're just very protected here in Pittsburgh. And we do get a lot of gray overcast days and a lot of rain, like in Oregon. And the climate here is just very similar.
Right.
And it's a great place because even though it's a pretty decent-sized city, it has that very neighborhood, small-town feel to it.
Right. And you're married and have family, Debbie?
I sure am. I am married to my husband and for 17 years now.
Good for you.
We're high school sweethearts, so it's going on 32 years since we met.
Nice.
I know. And then we have 3 children. We have a son, Noah, who's 16, and he's actually graduating high school. He has one more day after today, and he's quite excited, although...
How is that working, doctor? They're not actually going to school, right? The schools are shut down there, too?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I have 3 kids, and they're all on 3 systems right now, I think, like a lot of families in this country. I have kids on computers in different rooms on different devices, and he actually was already in online school, so this was not a transition for him, and so he's graduating from online school, although we will obviously be missing an actual in-person ceremony that they normally would have held.
How will they do the ceremony? Is it going to be an online ceremony?
It's going to be an online ceremony, and don't tell him, but we're ordering some fun things to surprise him.
There you go.
Have a party here at home, so that's exciting. He's just, you know, disappointed because I think there's a good chance that school in the fall will also be online, and, you know, that's not how people see themselves starting college. So,
you know, and if you think about it, when you and I went to school, You know, that who would have thought that we'd be going through what we're going through right now, where we can't go outside. You know, if you do go outside, you have to wear a mask, you have to wear gloves, you sanitize everything. Who would have thought that, you know, 30 years ago, that this is what we'd be doing?
I mean, who would have thought that a year ago?
Exactly.
A year ago, if you had told me this was going to happen, I wouldn't have believed you. I just, this is so far from our life as you know it, that it's really hard to wrap our head around, right? And it's just unfathomable.
Unbelievable.
But yet, here we are.
Your mother told me, I know your mom, as you know, and she told me about a month before this really kicked in, she says, talk to my doctor today. And I go, are my daughter today? And she says, yeah. And she says, there's a pandemic coming. And I go, no, come on now. She goes, yeah, there's a pandemic coming. And sure enough, a few weeks later, guess what happened? Well, let's talk a little bit about this horrible lifestyle that we're going through right now. You know, it's I was telling you off the air that you're sitting here at home, you're quarantined in your home. You're a doctor. You can't stay in your home, can you? You've got to get out there and take care of your patients.
That's right. It's a mixture for me, and I'm actually quite fortunate. So back in 2009, you'll remember we had H1N1, swine flu.
Right.
And that was my first year in practice out of residency. And because I was the new doc on the block, I was out there literally just from head to toe, like it was Ebola, but it wasn't, and seeing 80 patients a day.
Wow!
And my kids were babies then; they were babies, and I was terrified. I would come home; no one was allowed to touch me. I would take everything off in the garage. I'd run upstairs and do this whole decontamination shower every day. And what my kids remember, because they don't remember much about that time, but what they do remember, as soon as the vaccine came out, I brought home vaccine and vaccinated them myself. And I'm very lucky that 11 years later, I'm not the new person on the block. And so I have to say that I have several colleagues who have truly borne the brunt of this. We converted very, very quickly to telemedicine. UPMC was already in the process of converting and pushing towards telemedicine. And so in 1 week, our team converted thousands of doctors. Mm-hmm. And we were able to just have one doctor be in the office for the things that absolutely must be seen physically in person. And everybody else was able to sign up and do telemedicine shifts from home.
That's what happened with me recently. Was I had a schedule to go see my doctor, and they called me the day before and says, okay, we're going to do a phone appointment. And I go, well, how are you going to take my temperature? And she goes, do you have a thermometer? I go, yes. She goes, then you take it. Okay.
Yeah.
So we did it over the phone, and that was my appointment.
Yeah, and actually, you know, if you can say that there's any positive things happening as a consequence of this pandemic, I would say that this is one of the top positive things, is that it really jump-started telemedicine. Everyone has been wanting it. Patients have been wanting it. Providers have been wanting it. It makes sense for so many different things and for so many different reasons. As you know, many things take a long time in healthcare to transition over, especially with getting insurance plans on board to support new ideas. And so because of this, everything happened instantaneously. And the government granted the varying agencies and insurance companies jumped on board and started covering telehealth visits immediately, even telephone visits.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been a tremendous leap forward for medicine. And this is something that will stay.
All right. Doctor, we need to take a short break right now. And when we come back, more with today's special guest, Dr. Melinda Massert. And you're listening to the Terry Saul Show on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler and the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule, State Farm Insurance. Back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere, folks. We're just getting warmed up.
You're listening to the Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Terry Saul Weekend Show. Today's special guest, Dr. Melinda Massart from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we're talking about this coronavirus, this pandemic. You knew this was going to hit and hit hard before this ever hit and hit hard, didn't you?
I did.
How did you know that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think like many people, I follow the news. And I think because I am a doctor and I am so familiar with our healthcare system, and I did experience swine flu in 2009 as a provider, I just saw the writing on the wall. And I just knew that there was no way that we were going to be able to contain this. Everything that we were finding out from China and then Italy, it was very, very clear to me what was going to happen and that our country was not prepared.
Why did it hit Italy so damn hard? I mean, it shut that country down.
Well, you have to remember that Italy is essentially New York, right?
Okay.
So you could say the exact same thing happened to New York. Italy is a whole country concentrated in something the size of a state in our country.
Okay.
And so they're very, very parallel. So when I saw what happened in Italy, I knew what was going to happen in New York.
Was New York unprepared?
It wasn't that New York was any more unprepared than any other state in the country. I think that they were just as prepared and actually have tremendous leadership. I think that Governor Cuomo has really stood out as a phenomenal leader out of all of this situation. I think that it is just such a hub and spoke center of individuals coming and going within the country and all around the world, with so many different airports and so many people traveling in and out every single day. It was inevitable that it was going to be the hottest spot in our country.
When did this virus, when did it really start here in the United States?
Yeah, so that's actually a question I get a lot, because a lot of patients have contacted me and said, you know, doctor, I had some horrible illness in December or November or even January. I think maybe I had coronavirus. And the truth is, we don't have any evidence for that. A lot of research teams have gone back and collected samples or reanalyzed samples that were collected for various different reasons across the country back through those dates. And there was not secret or silent coronavirus running through the country at that time. It truly wasn't until February that we probably started having our first cases in the country.
Okay, so but before March, some places were shutting down, though. Is that correct?
You know, very few places shut down before March. Really only Seattle, where we saw our first cases, although now we know that there were cases in California before that. They just weren't recognized as such. And so not very many places across the country shut down until about the second week of March.
Do you think we were all naive? I mean, why did it take so long for us to just shut things down? Did we not think it could happen to us?
I don't think we're naive. I think we are optimists. As a country, we are a country of optimists. We want the best to happen. And I also think that because we have not, in our generation, lived through anything this significant, right? This is not nearly, swine flu was not nearly as significant. We haven't seen in this country anything like it. And so weighing the trade-off, the benefits versus the risks of shutting down early versus later versus at all, and now on the opposite side, weighing the benefits and the risks of opening up or not opening up yet, was a really hard calculation for everyone to make. Other countries experienced, you know, SARS and MERS in the last two decades firsthand. They saw it firsthand. We did not. And they knew what could happen and how quickly it could happen. And so they shut down very quickly. I think we're also a country of really independent thinkers, and we are not used to our government making such significant decisions that impact our everyday life like this.
As a doctor, as a mom, are you afraid? Are you scared for what's coming, or this is going to resurface down the road again? Are you afraid?
I'm not afraid. I am cautious. I am concerned. I myself would place myself in a higher risk category. I have a healthy amount of respect for this virus. As a scientist, I am very concerned because this virus has not been following any rules that any other virus has pre-established for us. So we have a lot of learning to do. And I'm devastated as an American to see so many lives lost.
Have you had anybody that you know or are close to affected by this virus?
Yeah, several actually. Pittsburgh had the benefit of the virus hitting Philadelphia first and our governor responding and shutting things down pretty early. So we have actually kept our curve very flat in Pittsburgh. But even with that, we still lost the very first month. We lost a very, very close friend of ours. And mom's actually had dinner there a couple times when she's visited us in Pittsburgh. And it's just a tragic, tragic loss. And since then, we have lost a few other friends around the country and then many relatives of friends that we have been informed of.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you a little bit about the symptoms, and we'll do that. We'll talk with Dr. Melinda Massert, and we will be back in just a minute. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Stern Wheel. Ever been on the Stern Wheel, or Melissa, when you come out here to Oregon?
Of course. It's my mom's boat.
Oh, but I guess you have been then. Also brought to you by the Lule Group, Don Lule Homes, Lule's Car Connection, and Teresa Lule, State Farm Insurance. Set you up for that one, didn't we? We'll be back in just a moment. Stick around.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
Good morning. We are back with the Terry Saul Weekend Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host. Today we're talking with Dr. Melinda Massert. And we're talking about this horrible virus. The virus has been plaguing all of us for quite a while here now, around the world, I should say. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Let's talk a little bit about the symptoms. I'm 64 years old, and I'm got some health issues that are working. You're well aware of what my health issues are and stuff. So I'm really staying home. But I'm telling you, doctor, you can only clean the silverware drawer so many times, and you got to get out of the house. But I'm afraid to because I feel like I'm in that age bracket where I need to really be concerned. Is that something I really need to be concerned about?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, as we mentioned before, this virus, you know, it's not playing by the book. It's completely novel. It is acting completely novel in new ways that we have not seen before. And we continue to develop new understanding about this virus every single week. One thing that is really clear is that older adults, for sure, are very high risk to getting the sickest and dying from this virus. The virus it's not picky. And sometimes, for no apparent reason, young individuals also become terribly sick. And as we've all now seen, there is this virus-associated inflammatory syndrome that is now being reported in children across the country, when previously we had thought that perhaps children were largely being asymptomatic when they have the virus. And so I think every single one of us needs to take this very, very seriously and needs to understand that there's no formula at this time that is going to predict who's going to be okay, who's going to have no symptoms at all, who's going to be mildly sick, and who's going to end up in the ICU on a ventilator.
One of the things that I've noticed, Doctor, is that people aren't taking this serious. At first they were. At first they seemed to be taking it serious, but now, as even driving in here to the radio station this morning for this interview, there were cars all over the place, people walking. There was a lady that I was at a stop sign with, and she was walking across the street with her two children, no mask, no gloves, nothing. And I just, you know, you want to roll down your window and go, hey, are you aware of what's going on? Why aren't people taking this serious?
I think there's a lot of different reasons why we're seeing that. I think that some people never took this seriously, think that it's a political game, of which I do not believe. And I think that there are people who did take it seriously, but now have a false sense of security and are coming back out. And I think that's because some places like Western Pennsylvania and like Oregon have done such a great job of keeping our curve flat that people have developed this false sense of security. And then finally, we have individuals who really, again, are weighing that risk-benefit equation, and in their personal analysis, they have to go out for whatever reason. I would certainly hope that if they do have to go out, that they would still continue to wear a mask, protect others, and protect themselves.
My wife works in a grocery store, and she has to go to work every day. She does wear a mask. She does wear gloves. And when she comes home, the first thing she does is she takes everything off and goes right into the washer. She's not even two steps in the door before that's dumped in the washer. And everything gets washed daily because she is around people all day long. And it scares the hell out of me. What are some of the symptoms? How do I know if I've got this virus, or what are the symptoms you look for?
Again, that's really tricky because the symptoms have been really varied from person to person. But we do know that several symptoms seem to be consistent, is that a lot of people have lost their sense of smell and taste in the first few days. Sometimes that's the only symptom people have had. Others go on to develop a fever, muscle aches, that kind of body soreness like the flu feeling, fatigue, exhaustion, cough, runny nose, and then shortness of breath.
So people don't know, they need to understand their own body. And if they're starting to have any of these things, should they call their doctor right away? Should they run to the hospital right away? What should they do if they think they may have this virus?
Back at the beginning, when we hadn't completely kind of gone into a lockdown, I would have told people that there were a lot of other viruses still traveling around, even more prevalent than COVID-19, right? So 2 months ago, it was still more likely that you actually had the flu or strep throat than COVID-19. But one of the things that has happened with the social isolation or the social distancing is there's been a decrease in those other viruses going around, which increases the likelihood that now those symptoms are from coronavirus. It's not 100%. We still have flu. We still have strep throat. We still have colds and other viruses traveling around. But in regions where we know there's been notable disease from coronavirus, I would be concerned. We don't want people running to the hospital unless they are truly feeling short of breath or in a life-threatening situation. Then they should call 911 or be taken to the nearest emergency room. If you're stable, then you should call your local doctor's office. If you don't have one, call the local urgent care or the health department to find out where testing is available.
They will guide you whether or not you need to come in there and be tested and stuff, correct?
Absolutely. And testing is also hugely variable, as we all know.
That was my next question, is what is the test? How do they test for this virus?
Yeah, and so the major test is to see if you actually have coronavirus particles present in your body. And they do that through that nasal pharyngeal or oral pharyngeal swab. So that's that long Q-tip that they swab in the back of your throat or through one of your nostrils and swab the back there, and send that to actually be tested to see if you have coronavirus particles in your mucus or sputum. As we know, testing isn't available at the same amount everywhere, and sometimes people can only get tested if they're quite sick or in the hospital. Some places people can get tested if, even they have no symptoms at all and just want to know. So it varies a lot what's available. And now you're probably also hearing about antibody testing coming out.
Okay.
And antibody testing it's confusing a lot of people. Antibody testing is to look to see if you have evidence in your bloodstream that you had a previous coronavirus infection, especially COVID-19 coronavirus. And unfortunately, there was a few months there where in order to increase the availability of tests, some of the FDA regulations were loosened to get tests out to the market. And what that resulted in was a lot of tests sent out to the market, out to the public, that had not been proven to have a really high sensitivity and a high specificity, meaning there was a high chance of having a false positive or a false negative test. And this goes for both the actual coronavirus test as well as the antibody test. Since then, the FDA has put more restrictions back in place and trying to make sure that the tests available to all of us are of the highest quality, but I'm not sure that's completely done at this point in time. And so there are certainly people who have gone to be tested for coronavirus with that swab that were told they were negative and they were not. And we now know that perhaps even up to, you know, one out of five people who tested negative really were positive, right? That's what we call a false negative. And that's very concerning because they may have then gone out and continued to be with people and spread the disease thinking they were negative. And the antibody testing is similar, has a slightly different problem in that it cross-reacts. As we all know, coronavirus is a family of viruses, right? It's not coronavirus that's new. It's the specific type of coronavirus, the COVID-19, that is new. And so many of us have had other coronaviruses infections at some point in our lifetime, and some of these antibody tests cross-react. And so if it comes back positive, I don't know if I had COVID-19 or another coronavirus 7 years ago.
Wow.
So that's not really very helpful.
How long does it take to get the results back? If I took the test right now, how long would it take until I got the results?
Most of the tests right now are taking about 24 to 48 hours, so much better. In the beginning, it was taking up to a week and a half to get results. But it's much faster now.
Well, how are some of these different venues saying, well, come on by, we'll take your temperature, and if you're fine, you can come in? Well, that's not really advising whether or not you have this, kind of silly, really, isn't it?
I see that, too. And I, on one hand, I say that's sort of silly. On the other hand, I feel like, you know, people need to feel empowered that they're doing something. And since we don't have instantaneous foolproof tests yet to be able to give everybody as they walk through the door, they're trying to do the next best thing. But I think we all know that there are many asymptomatic carriers out there. And so checking a temperature doesn't mean someone doesn't have coronavirus and isn't shedding coronavirus. And that's why the masks are important. And I always remind everyone, as often as I can, you know, you're not wearing a mask to protect yourself. You're wearing a mask to protect everyone else.
Right.
In case you are sick and don't know it, you're wearing a mask so that one little cough when you clear your throat, you don't actually contaminate the 10 people standing near you in the grocery aisle.
If you are told, hey, you are positive for COVID-19, is it an automatic death sentence?
Oh, no, not even close. The majority of everybody who's ever been infected with COVID-19 in the world has recovered. It's not the majority that has passed away.
Then why are we being misled?
No, we're not being misled. What's really hard and frustrating is to understand the implication of the numbers, right? One thing is when you look at the total number of positive tests, right, in our country or around the world, when you look at those trackers, those are only people who went to get tested, right?
Okay.
And so for every positive test, there's probably 2, 3, 5 other people who have coronavirus who didn't go get tested and are not being counted in that tracker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's the denominator. That's how many people actually got infected. So we only have a fraction of those numbers. What we're more likely to capture are the numbers of people who die, though, right? Because we have, you know, methods in place to track that and to capture it. And although it's going to take time to get the most accurate numbers and to sort through all these numbers over the next few months, we will have a fairly accurate number of how many people passed away. But when we don't know the true number of how many people were infected, we can't say what the percent death rate actually was, right? Is it 1%? Is it 2%? Is it 0.5%? Ultimately, do any of those percents matter when it's your loved one?
Exactly. We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, Dr. Massett's going to talk to us about maybe reopening our country. And also, we'll take a look at some of these vaccines that they're saying that may just help. Back in a moment.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We're back in 5, 4, Q-Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We are back with our final few minutes. Today's guest has been Dr. Melinda Massert, and we're talking about this coronavirus. And we were talking just a few minutes ago before we took our break there about if you get a positive result, that doesn't really mean, finish my sentence.
Yeah, specifically if you get a positive antibody result, that
okay.
Right now that test is pretty meaningless. As we mentioned earlier, the tests often can cross-react with other viruses, so we know that you may have been exposed and you may have had COVID-19, but we don't know 100% certainty that it was COVID-19. So we need much more specific antibody testing. And additionally, one of the big confounders right now is that we don't know that having antibodies means that you're immune to the disease. We have seen several cases around the world and in our country where people appear to have been infected a second time.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so we don't, you know, in historically, we tend to think when someone has an antibody, right, if you have antibody to chickenpox, you shouldn't get chickenpox. But we are not seeing that with COVID-19. We cannot say that you have antibody means that you are not going to get the disease again or that you will not be contagious and spread the disease again. So a lot of research still needs to happen around that. And that's going to impact our ability to open back up.
Okay, before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about the vaccines. You know, a lot of places are saying, well, we're not going to open up until we get a cure. Well, a cure could be months, if not years away. Is that correct?
Yeah, and there may never be a cure. You know, a cure would mean that we can treat something with 100% success. And as most people know, with viruses, that's not the case. It's not like with bacterial infections where we have successfully identified antibiotics that can completely treat a bacterial infection. Viral infections, we have not been that successful with any type of cures. Sometimes we have found medications that greatly increase the rate at which we recover, help us fight the virus more quickly. But I don't think a cure is necessarily the way to be thinking about treating this virus. I think it's really about the vaccine.
What about the amount of money that is being lost right now? Let's just take a look at sports. They're talking about the NFL, which generates literally millions and millions and millions of dollars each year. Not having games with an audience until something is resolved. Well, nothing's going to be resolved right away. Nothing can be resolved. So how do we reopen this country?
I think that it's a really big challenge and a challenge that, again, no one in our generation has been faced with. And obviously, it's not black and white, right? It's not all or none. We cannot just jump back in and reopen immediately, or we are going to see thousands and thousands of more deaths. And we can't remain closed forever because we are having these major financial consequences, both on a large scale all the way down to individual household scale. So we have to find that happy ground. We have to find that middle ground where we're weighing the benefits and the risks. And I think investing towards a vaccine is the right way to go. And then finding the middle ground that is as safe as can be until that time when there's a vaccine ready.
Are we in the eye of the storm right now? I mean, is it? Are we going to get a resurge of this thing? And a lot of people are talking about, well, wait until September, October. It's going to come by and be even harder than it hit before. Do you see that happening?
I personally doubt it's going to take that long. I think it's going to happen sooner than that. I think that...
Why do you say that? Why do you think sooner?
Because so many states are relaxing the guidelines so quickly before we are even seeing a true decline in their numbers. So I think we're going to see a resurgence much more quickly than the fall. But that's just my gut feeling. And we may see several surges. You know, I really like the state of Pennsylvania has labeled three zones, right? A red zone, meaning we're on true social isolation and high risk and high concern. Yellow zone, and then a green zone. And just today, actually, Pittsburgh went from the red to the yellow zone. And I think it's very likely that we'll go back and forth, right? It won't just be one peak and then a second peak. There may be times where we go back to red for a few weeks and then back to yellow and then maybe back to red again for a few weeks and back to yellow. And a lot of that's going to depend on how many people are sick and what that demand is like on the system, specifically the healthcare system. You know, are we able to handle all the patients that are coming in and needing to be cared for?
Are the insurance companies stepping up to the plate? These testing, I mean, they can't be cheap. Who's paying for it?
You know, I cannot speak for that. I can say they have stepped up to the plate to support healthcare during this time in terms of transitioning to the telehealth visits, but I have no knowledge on the coverage in terms of testing. I do know that Trump had offered that the government would cover testing. I don't know the state of that right now.
Okay. And right now we're seeing some of the prices double in local stores, grocery stores and stuff. And it's not just the hoarders that are out there buying up all the toilet paper, but it's just because there's such a shortage of products. What should we be putting away right now to get through the next few months of this quarantine?
At this point, I don't think that there's anything that anyone should be stockpiling. I think the best thing we can all be mindful of right now is just to get what we need. I still think that we should be trying to shop for a full 1 to 2 weeks at a time to decrease the number of times that we have to go out and expose ourselves, because every time we go out, there is a risk that we will pick up the virus. But I don't think there's any one product that anyone should be stocking up on at this time and being worried about. And that's what's going to prevent major shortages and major things from disappearing, like we all saw with the toilet paper the first month.
Didn't understand that one at all. Didn't get that at all. Now the disinfectant wipes are short. You can't find them anywhere at all. My wife works at a store, a grocery store, like I say, and every now and then she'll come home with a bottle of hand sanitizer and say, we got a shipment in today, and I grabbed one of them. I think that the hardest part is you can't see this virus coming. You don't know who's got it. You don't know where it's at. It comes up and gets you.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's what we have to remember, is what we did so far is we kept our curves under control, so that we didn't destroy the healthcare system and have more patients that we could take care of. I think we saw what that could look like in New York City. That could have happened around the entire country. But we have not won the race. We have not eliminated the virus. It is still out there. There are still tens of, you know, thousands of people who are sick and who are potentially spreading this virus across our country. And we need to remain very vigilant.
With the final minute and a half or so we have left, Doctor, are we going to win? Are we going to beat this thing?
We are going to beat this thing. I feel very strongly. Again, are we going to eradicate it? No, it's going to join forces just like all the other virus strains, influenza strains that circulate around the world every single year. But we will make it manageable and we will develop vaccines. I feel very confident in that. And we will not have to be so fearful of a massive pandemic like this again from this virus. But what I think we've learned most is that we are vulnerable and pandemics will happen, and we need to be better prepared, and we better learn our lesson this time so that we are prepared again next time.
Dr. Massert, thank you. I always enjoy talking with you because you make it so easy for even an idiot like me to understand this stuff. And all we can do is just hunker down and get through this thing. We're all going through it together, and we just need to stay home, stay healthy, and we'll get through it together.
Amen.
All right. Thank you, Doctor. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We are just about out of time for today's show. Remember, you can catch our show every Saturday at 10 a.m. and a replay Sundays at 11 a.m. here on Salem's original radio station, KSLM. A reminder, if you missed any of today's show or would like to hear any of my shows, you can always hear a podcast on our official KSLM website at www.kslm.news or on my official website at www.terrysaul.com. If you would like to drop me a note, I would love to hear from you. My email address is terry@kslm.news. We'll see you next time. Take care and be safe.
You've been listening to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Holmes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Good show.
Bye, everybody.